Political analyst Barry Grossman, who is joining us live from Bali. Mr. Grossman, of course, our guest from Cape Town did mention that it was only a matter of time before we could see the clashes escalating to this level, considering the fact that Israelis did not stop at anything, and they have been targeting Lebanon, and there are over 560 people, mostly civilians, of course, targeted by Israeli attacks in Lebanon. So, Mr. Grossman, in your opinion, what does this attack on Tel Aviv signify? The fact that we know mainstream media and Israeli media had been talking a lot about Hezbollah being weakened, particularly after these recent attacks. What does this attack on Tel Aviv show?
Well, it certainly throws down the gauntlet to the occupation forces. And moreover, it puts everybody on notice that these very elaborate missile defense systems that Israel has are not capable of stopping all incoming missiles. Of which, of course, Hezbollah controls very many. And whatever the occupation does to Hezbollah, it does not take a large number of fighting men to release a missile targeting, some place, some installation in the occupied territory. That much is clear. How it will be played in the international community is another thing. We need to understand the background, which of course is that despite Hezbollah being probably having been probably the most effective fighting force against ISIL both in Syria and Iraq, and being in very large part responsible for sending them running with their tails tucked between their legs, the United States State Department, no doubt under lobbying from Israel, designated Hezbollah to be a terrorist organization. When you couple that with the attitude the occupation takes to such matters, what we see is that anybody killed by the occupation, anybody who is in any way associated with, supportive of, or even in proximity to something that can be described as Hezbollah, is deemed to be a terrorist, which of course is absurd. So how this plays out remains to be seen, but it's very clear that since the genocidal attack on Gaza started on October the 7th, there's been just short of 10,000 attacks across the Lebanese border, 82% of which were initiated by the Israelis, who accounted for an order of magnitude almost more fatalities than the very carefully well-considered and targeted attacks carried out by Hezbollah, which was trying to avoid escalating this into a full-on regional war, since that, of course, plays into the ambitions of Israel. But, of course, it's been left with very little choice, especially after the exploding pagers and other personal communication devices, the various assassinations that have taken place, all without any real denunciation by Atlantic world countries, let alone the United States. So I'm afraid we're going to see this escalate. Of course, Lebanese people and Palestinians will continue to pay the price in blood to some extent, but the occupation is going to be worn down. And ultimately, if this isn't stopped, there's going to be a regional conflagration that will completely interfere with regional security. And from the point of view of Atlantic countries, the safe delivery of oil and gas through the Gulf and through pipelines that are constructed in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. These are all sitting ducks for targets. But ultimately, there can't be any confusion about this. And of course, various Israeli politicians have said this. They have no problem with, as was put by one member of the Knesset, bombing Lebanon into the Stone Age and turning it into another Gaza, because, as many have said over recent years, their ultimate aim is to unleash a war against Iran and what they like to call all Iranian proxies, which of course explains why many countries in the Arab League under the control, or at least whose foreign policy is under the control of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, have been willing to support Israel, or at least clandestinely support Israel, while some of them have gone so far as to normalize relations in a treaty which requires them to treat Hamas as terrorists and to put Israeli security interests above all other considerations, including their own domestic laws. So this is going to get a lot messier. I don't think we should hope for any reasonableness to prevail from the United States. And of course, with the UN operating the way it doesn't ultimately matter much what anybody has to say in the UN, as long as the United States continues to make money selling arms to these people and ultimately enjoys the veto power in the Security Council.
Okay, so Mr. Grossman, we're also witnessing huge demonstrations in New York and Toronto yesterday, for example, in both of these cities. These grassroots movements rising now against the U.S. support for Israel and demanding a halt to these attacks, demanding them to stop Israel, because if Israel obviously has not stopped at this point, it will continue. And as you mentioned yourself, these clashes will escalate to the entire region. So do you believe that these grassroots movements can pressure the U.S. as the main ally of Israel to stop its support, or at least reduce its support, and put an arms embargo on Israel? Also, let's not forget that the UN General Assembly is underway, and we've had a large number of politicians demanding the same thing.
Well, I mean, like, over a long period of time, of course, public opinion does tend to matter, and it's reassuring to see so many people protesting this belligerent genocidal war against Palestinians, which is now also expanding to Lebanon. But at the end of the day, the political apparatus doesn't really care much what people have to say, doesn't care a great deal about popular opinion when the choice being offered to the electorate, as is the case right now, is between horrible and entirely catastrophic. So there's really no votes to be garnered by changing, for example, the Democratic Party changing their position, because they would simply be ceding votes to the Republican candidate, to Donald Trump, who's made it very clear that he stands fully in support of Israel and thinks they should, as he put it not so long ago, finish the job. So there's not a lot of room for votes in all of that. And at the end of the day, of course, IPAC is far more powerful in Congress than public opinion ever has been. So I think it's very difficult to hold up much hope for any significant change there. Personally, I think the United Nations could do more, and even the General Assembly, because there is a mechanism in the UN Charter which allows the General Assembly to seize itself of a matter to the exclusion of the Security Council if the Security Council is not doing what it's charged with doing in order to maintain regional security and uphold the basic principles of the United Nations. And what we see happening in the Security Council when it comes to this horrible war in Palestine clearly is not being resolved, in large part, if not entirely, because the United States is running political interference on behalf of Israel, threatening not only members of the United Nations, but also officials in the international courts and officials in countries that have signed on for this case at the ICJ, and even the lead prosecutor in the ICC, whose appointment was fully supported by Israel and who was performing in a less than stellar manner, one could argue, prior to his recent decision, that could no longer close his eyes and has sought to commence an investigation against numerous officials in the Israeli political apparatus and even seek an arrest warrant for Benjamin Netanyahu.
So, Mr. Grossman, do you believe that there is some hope with the UN General Assembly stepping in somehow to de-escalate the situation?
Well, I think ultimately the only real hope that we can hold on to comes from the power exercised by the resistance, bearing in mind that it's long been recognized, even by the United Nations, that every occupied peoples has as an inherent right to engage in armed resistance against their occupiers, okay? So with that in mind, along with the fact that Hezbollah, for example, unlike Israel, tends to target military installations in Israel, I think ultimately this comes down to the power, the rightly guided power of the resistance and its ability to wreak havoc in Israel and in the wider region to the extent of those countries that are supporting Israel can also be targeted as well. For example, in a full-scale regional war, the Atlantic world can just forget about any oil and gas moving out of the Gulf region, with all that means for the global economy and everything else. It would, that would be a disaster in monetary and financial terms, worse than the Great Depression of the 30s.
So, Mr. Grossman, you did point to Hezbollah's attacks, and of course, we've been mentioning Hezbollah resistance movement and addressing it that way, but let's also discuss more about what Hezbollah means to Lebanon. It is more than just a resistance movement. It is also a political party, politically active in the Lebanese society and the different ranks. And of course, they are in charge of ministries as well. If you could please elaborate more on that, the fact that Israel is attacking Hezbollah, it's actually attacking the Lebanese government in a way.
Absolutely, and I've said it before quite recently even, that if we look at historical examples, like for example, the Irish Republican Army in Ireland, the IRA had a military branch and a political branch, and even the British, of all people, the British recognized that demarcation and reserved their military response for the military branch and more or less left the political branch alone. And that's how ultimately they came to a resolution such as it is of their differences. A similar phenomenon played out in South Africa. It's really only Israel that's ever taken the position that as a result of having lobbied successfully the US to designate both Hezbollah and Hamas as terrorist organizations in an entirely political process, by declaring war on Hamas, they will not stop this genocidal military effort until such time as Hamas is totally destroyed in all of its manifestations, including the military wing, the political wing, and it seems anybody who supports Hamas. And again, the same can be said for Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah is a very important political party in Lebanon to many of us, and in many ways is pivotal in keeping other politicians, shall we say, honest, or at least a little bit more honest than they're otherwise inclined to be. Lebanon has its own problems, has frequently been targeted not only by Israel, but by France and the United States and the wider Atlantic world, and even by Saudi Arabia. So, you know, Lebanon has its own problems, and Hezbollah, the political party, plays a key role in navigating all of those domestic problems, in addition to defending the nation and assisting allies like the Palestinian people while they're being decimated in what, on any measure, has to be an illegal, considered an illegal and genocidal war.
So, Mr. Grossman, the fact that Hezbollah was capable of attacking Tel Aviv directly in and of itself is very significant. You did mention that Hezbollah does only attack military targets, which is again another plus for Hezbollah as compared to Israel, which does not spare civilians in its attacks. But more significant than these attacks on Tel Aviv and the military might of Hezbollah, the fact that it was capable of targeting the Mossad headquarters, the part that was responsible for those device attacks and the assassination of Lebanese resistance leaders, that sends a message that Hezbollah, in terms of its logistics and, of course, in terms of receiving information from different parties, it is also quite capable of getting information about what's going on exactly in Tel Aviv, and that should be scaring the regime.
Absolutely. I mean, this throws down the gauntlet and lets everybody know, especially those people that make up the occupation, that Hezbollah, too, is very capable of gathering intelligence, carefully considering it and working out a military response, but one which fits within the international rules of armed conflict, but for the fact that they've been, through this political process, designated by the U.S. to be a terrorist organization. Secondly, and perhaps even more importantly, it's quite clear now that Hezbollah has a large arsenal of admittedly somewhat lower yielding missiles than Israel has, and with shorter ranges, but more than adequate, that can penetrate the missile defenses of Israel.
So, Mr. Grossman, if Israel is not stopped here and now, how do you see these clashes escalating into something bigger? What would the next step be as far as Netanyahu is concerned?
Look, I would never personally be one to describe anything that takes place between Israel and its neighbors as clashes, although I fully understand what you're driving at. Look, I mean, the leadership in Israel are virtually psychotic by any reasonable measure. And in fact, the nation of people that are living there now, notwithstanding the fact that only a few weeks ago they were protesting in vast numbers and even organizing a general strike, in recent opinion polls, if an election was held tomorrow, would elect Netanyahu and his party in an unprecedented majority. Most of the people in Israel not only support, and I mean about 80% according to opinion polls, support the Israeli war on Palestinians, but feel that Israel hasn't gone far enough. So we're not dealing with people who are a model of morality measured by any standard that ordinary people are familiar with. And that being the case, I don't think there's going to be any quick solutions here. So few things are more important than the resistance working together with all the synergies involved, than their ability to, if not bring Israel to its knees, to certainly force the Atlantic world to intervene by putting their economies at risk as a result of turning off the flow of oil and gas from the wider region.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has postponed his trip to New York for the UN General Assembly address after Tel Aviv was targeted by Hezbollah. What does that mean? But this is definitely a clear sign that there is total chaos in Tel Aviv as an observer, I would say.
Well, I personally, I think it's quite outrageous that he's even given a platform to speak there, given that as we speak, there are moves afoot in Israel to have UNRWA designated as a terrorist organization, if you can actually believe that. That's what's playing out right now. So for the prime minister of the country that is actively trying to designate UNRWA as a terrorist organization to address the General Assembly and spout his vitriol seems to me entirely inappropriate. Personally, I don't think he should be given the platform or even be asked to appear. He clearly is an enemy of United Nations and the so-called international system that it is charged with protecting. Israel wants no part of that system, except insofar as it works to their favor.
Okay, we also have with us Mr. Grossman, Leila Hatoum. So please stand by as we bring Leila into this discussion. Journalist and commentator joining us live from Beirut. Leila, can you give us the latest? What are the most recent developments there after Hezbollah issued a statement about these attacks on Tel Aviv? A huge development there.
It is a huge development. This is the first time that they hit the suburbs of Tel Aviv and with a new ballistic missile. This is a new missile that they introduced into the battlefield, Qadr 1. And at the same time, they put a specification why they hit that Mossad headquarters. They said it is responsible for the pagers and walkie-talkies explosions. So they are directly linking Mossad to what happened last week when it came to the pagers and walkie-talkies explosions that caused more than 3,300 deaths and injuries among Lebanese civilians. I mean, and that's one of the retaliation, but it's not the final one. But what everybody is that the Israelis are now being dysfunctional. The Israeli occupation forces are being dysfunctional because every single time they try to do basically an air raid over Beirut, their bases get hit. So they're now hitting haphazardly target and their ability to focus more. We've seen it over the past 24 hours. The Israelis did not launch as many raids as before. That's because every single airbase and military base, not only basically within the 10 to 12 kilometers radius, but also beyond 60 kilometer radius, 110 kilometer radius, have been hit, not only along the northern front from the occupied Palestinian territories, but also from the occupied Syrian Golan, expanded. Has fanned its occupation forces, military bases, and air bases. They all 2 days that we haven't seen before. Their statements are also including, we hit the settlement of Ketzarin, we hit the settlement of Kiryat Shmona. So they're not the IOF outposts or military posts only, but also the settlements directly.
So, Leila, if you could please elaborate more on the situation on the ground there in Beirut after the detonation of those communications devices. Was this attack on Tel Aviv something that the people in Lebanon were expecting to happen? Did they demand this to happen? What is the mood, basically? Are people satisfied of this level of showcasing military and intelligence power?
I can tell you one thing, that when the pagers terrorist attacks happened against Lebanon and then later on the next day, the walkie-talkies also exploded, that's also another terrorist attack. There was a general sense of anger and people were pressuring Hezbollah to go and directly attack the Israeli entity. So there was a pressure on Hezbollah to create an escalation in the war. However, Hezbollah is level-headed. They do believe it's a war of attrition. You expand, we expand. This is what Hezbollah Secretary General Syed Hassan Nasrallah had told the Israelis. You expand this war, we expand from our side. Tit for tat, tit for tat. People on the ground continue to pressure Hezbollah for more vengeance. They're angry. The ones who had left the southern villages down to Beirut and other safe havens, as they call them, they did it because they have family members. Yes, they are afraid for their family members, but at the same time, they do understand the situation. Since 2006, we have passed through this during the Israeli occupation's aggression on Lebanon in 2006. The Lebanese empty the villages, so when Hezbollah fights, there are not much civilian targets that the Israelis can hit, and Hezbollah can fight more freely. The Israelis have been warning that they're going to go with a land invasion. The resistance is ready for that. But when it comes to the people on the ground, everybody's angry. Everybody's talking how terrorist this attack is, and even the international community. I mean, they targeted en masse civilian population. Most of those who lost their lives and who lost their limbs and their eyes are nurses, people who work in the F&B industry, people who work in the transportation industry. Those are the ones who use usually the pagers and walkie-talkies. So Hezbollah does understand this. And following the attack that happened on Friday, remember, they assassinated one of Hezbollah commanders. Saturday, directly overnight, Hezbollah retaliated. They didn't wait for a month or a week or so. They directly retaliated because we have 55 civilians who were killed in that attack. And since then, they started targeting the settlements and they started targeting the main bases that were behind these attacks, air bases where the planes came from, and the Mossad headquarters where the pagers came from, or basically where the electronic warfare happens.
So, Leitha, what about anti-U.S. sentiments in Lebanon? How much support does the U.S. enjoy inside Lebanon by the Lebanese people after all this?
I can tell you one thing, because we go on the ground a lot, not only from the south and Beirut, but we also go to the north and Bekaa. And most of my reporters and the people I speak with, they always say that even if people were against Hezbollah politically in the past, they're supporting it against the Israeli occupation and anybody supporting it. It had been revealed to us that the US and the UK were part of the attacks, the terrorist attacks, the pager attacks, by giving intel to the Israelis. So everybody is angry at the US. Nobody wants to see an escalation in this war, but they see that the US is pushing for it, despite its what you call gilded words, that they want to de-escalate through diplomatic moves, right? So today, we heard the Americans, yesterday we heard the Americans say that they are against an Israeli land invasion to Lebanon. That means the US is actually supporting the Israelis with that, but they're just saying it as words that they are against it. Usually they say we are against this war, but they send weapons to the Israelis. If they are against this war, they would have cut off the Israelis from weapons, right? Like cut off the weapons from the Israelis. People have mass anger against the US. They see it as an accomplice to the crime, complicit in killing the Lebanese, as well as the British. This is a new sentiment that we're seeing on the ground. People are directly blaming the United Kingdom for taking part in this war, allowing its airbase to be used in Cyprus for the Israelis, giving them intel, sending them espionage drones, and so forth. So the whole situation, I can tell you this, majority of Lebanese we speak with are against the Americans. They're against the British, against the Israelis. They don't want this war, but it's imposed on them, so they have to go and support Hezbollah. We see it happen directly after the pagers attack. People who belong to different political factions that were against Hezbollah went down to donate blood. They said, we will not stand with the enemy against our own people. This is something that the Israelis were pushing for. They were banking on sedition. They were banking on dividing the Lebanese and creating that accusatory finger against Hezbollah by saying, like, you dragged us into this. Nobody did that. The very few sounds or basically voices we heard here and there in the media actually belong to the right-wing groups that actually served the Israelis back when the Israelis occupied most of Lebanon between the 1978 all the way down to 2000.
Okay, let's bring back Mr. Barry Grossman to discuss that further. Mr. Grossman, you just heard a Lebanese journalist from Beirut explaining how sentiments have changed towards the U.S. and, of course, the U.K. as well, particularly after it was revealed that they provided logistics and intelligence to Israelis to conduct that huge attack, which was considered mainly an attack on civilians. What is your opinion about how these sentiments could shape the political relationships and the political equations in the region?
Well, you know, that's a good question that probably is a very complicated answer. Certainly, I would love to see Lebanon untangle itself from following the directives of other Arab League countries in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in particular, and free itself of the last colonial vestiges established by the French, not to mention American influence. Lebanon and the Lebanese deserve to stand as an independent nation without constantly being interfered with by outside parties and having their policies dictated to them by outside interests. Having said that, you know, this is a process that's going to take probably generations. It is, however, good to see that a majority of people are very unhappy with the involvement of both the United States and the United Kingdom in what, as your other guest pointed out, was clearly a terrorist attack. It was all but random. This wasn't some carefully targeted attack, as some people might assume from the way the story was presented in the mainstream media. These pagers went out to everybody, including almost all of the medical profession, barring those who worked in the university hospital associated with the United States. And many people were injured and killed, the majority of them having nothing whatsoever to do with Hezbollah. But as with all of these things, and of course the U.S. started this years ago with its drone attacks, they called them signature attacks, where they didn't even know who they were targeting, but they presumed that person to be a terrorist by having some previous affiliation, having identified them somewhere in the company of other known, according to the U.S. standard, terrorists in the past. And when they targeted them with these signature attacks, they were presumed to be terrorists, even though there was no evidence, and anyone in their vicinity was killed, including civilians, were presumed to be terrorists. And that's how the U.S. sold this campaign. And that strategy, if you like, at manipulating public opinion is very similar to what Israel does. Basically, according to Israel, anybody who they kill is a terrorist by definition. So we can throw all other definitions out the window. And it's high time people started to realize that. And of course, in Lebanon today, they've come to that realization. This is not some small number of people. 4,000 people and their entire families had their lives touched by various years of Israeli violence. And this is not something that people are going to forget quickly. And insofar as a ground invasion, you know, as your previous speaker, the guest, pointed out, when the U.S. talks about, you know, they don't favor a ground invasion, that's when we know there will be one. That's what, of course, happened in Rafah. A ground invasion in Rafah was the closest thing the Biden administration came to drawing a red line. And even as Biden was trying to pummel that point, you know, drive that point home through the media, there was a massive operation playing out in Rafah that continues to this day. The one place that was designated supposedly as a safe zone for Palestinians in Gaza to take refuge in. So we can expect that there's a lot more coming in the near future. And in fact, the Israeli military apparatus has made it very clear that they're just getting started. There have been a number of press releases done and other comments made indicating that they're planning to escalate this. What form that escalation takes remains to be seen, but I would suggest that whatever form it is, it's going to have terrorist overtones or just be pure acts of terrorism.
Okay, let's bring in Leila Hatoum back for one last question. Leila, how has this attack on Lebanon brought Lebanese factions and political groups and people with different ideas together? Has this, in a way, created more solidarity in Lebanon?
As I said before, the Israelis were working on creating rift and sedition among the various Lebanese factions, especially political factions that are opposed to Hezbollah, before October 7. However, what we saw on the ground is the same thing that we saw in 2006 and even before, during the Israeli aggressions, the former Israeli aggressions. The Lebanese always stick together. The majority of the Lebanese always stick together. They try to help out. We had people from various political factions offering their homes for free to people. We have spent overnight trying to find places for those who are displaced, who can't pay money to rent out new apartments. And we found a lot of people who were giving their homes for free, rooms for free as well to them. We saw people who were donating blood from also different factions, different political factions, and different religious, basically, backgrounds. Remember, Hezbollah is seen by everybody as a Shia Muslim community, right? Their community is Shia Muslim. But they do have now the support of Christians, Druze, and others from across Lebanon, offering their homes and their blood. And some of them basically said, if you need an organ, we will donate an organ, because some of those who had the pagers on their side during the terrorist pagers attack, they got blasted, and one of their kidneys were damaged at one point. Their eyes were damaged. Some people were offering their eyes. Imagine that, like one of their eyes. This is the level of solidarity you can see. And this foiled the Israeli plan to actually divide the Lebanese society and create more pressure on Hezbollah, that nobody wants you, nobody wants your war, or that you are supporting Gaza. You have to understand, this war is not only to support Gaza, but it's also to defend the Lebanese people and its grounds. And the Hezbollah has introduced that into its statements in defense of Lebanon and its people. Every new statement that comes out, it says in support of Gaza, the steadfast people over there, and its resistance, and in defense of its people. And then it says in defense of Lebanon and its people as well. So the whole thing is that they have incorporated the Lebanese population into this statement as a token of thank you, and to show the world that they are also defending Lebanon, not only Gaza. This is what people don't understand. Even when we went as a support front to Gaza, it wasn't only because of Gaza. It's because once the Israelis finish with Palestine, they will come to Lebanon. And this is what the Lebanese population found out. And this is why the Lebanese population are standing behind their resistance rather than standing against it.
Okay, so Mr. Grossman, what is your opinion about these Lebanese factions and political groups, particularly those who used to see Hezbollah as a rival, as a political rival? How have these attacks brought solidarity and unity in Lebanon?
I have to say, I can't really speak to that, except, of course, to note, as the rest of the world knows, that, you know, Lebanon has been plagued by political divisions and foreign interference from various quarters, including Saudi Arabia, the United States, France, Great Britain, and the rest. So to the extent the response that this tragic event is pulling the Lebanese together, it's a silver lining, if you like, in an otherwise horrible incident. And it really doesn't get any clearer when people start offering to donate organs to people who are injured, when people are willing to give up an eye and a kidney. You know, in many places people won't do that for their family. So it's a fabulous development to see that this has engendered that kind of response on the part of people. That's about as close to being able to pull together as a nation as it gets. And I certainly commend that.
So in the future, do you believe that these political rivalries will decrease in Lebanon, Mr. Grossman?
Well, I think, you know, the ability for them to decrease rests on a whole lot of considerations. But are certainly tied to the ability of Hezbollah to gain still more political strength, and across the board willingness to fight corruption, which of course provides, if you like, a culture, a medium through which non-legitimate interests can get into the political process and manipulate outcomes, policies, and ultimately political opinions. So it's a huge task that remains to be played out, but it's a start. But ultimately, I think the most decisive factor would be to see Hezbollah grow still stronger in its political manifestation in Lebanon so that it can deal with the other problems that are plaguing Lebanon from within amongst the political elite, better take care of the interests of ordinary Lebanese people who in recent years have certainly been through a lot. You know, they've had a very difficult time with the economy since around the time, well, since really before, but certainly aggravated by that massive explosion which happened in Beirut. So they're due for some kind of relief. And ultimately, I think as far as political groups go, I haven't seen any indication that anyone can bring that relief better than Hezbollah.
And as we speak, Mr. Grossman, the sirens are sounding in Haifa following a rocket attack that was launched from southern Lebanon. So we see these attacks continuing now. What do you think that means, Mr. Grossman?
Well, as your other guest said, you know, the attacks by Israel are ongoing. They made it clear they have plans for many more. There have been many previous very serious attacks and very, very serious assassinations, which still have not been properly responded to. So there's going to be still missiles flying both ways. Air sorties attacking Lebanon, and Hamas is, Hezbollah is letting it be known that they're not going to be a pushover. So that's great. And of course, the occupation forgets that unlike Palestinians, you know, there's no embargo on Hezbollah. Hezbollah is more than capable of topping up its arsenal of weapons without the sort of restrictions that are imposed on Palestinians, especially those who are in Gaza. So this has to be something of great concern to them because they're really potentially facing an attack on many fronts, including from Yemen, from within, by Palestine, by Lebanon, Iran potentially, and of course, to the extent Syria can, by Syria.
Well, that's an interesting point you mentioned right there. So let's bring back Leila. If you just heard Mr. Grossman just mentioning a very interesting point that Israel seems to forget that Lebanon, unlike Gaza, is not under an arms embargo and is quite capable of improving its arsenal and becoming even stronger than what it is now. So do you believe that the Israelis have not taken that into account by starting this kind of escalation, which is clearly going to continue by Hezbollah, as they have vowed to retaliate for the assassination of their leaders? Leila?
Oh, the question is for me. I thought it was for Mr. Rosen. The thing is, it's not, even if there was an arms embargo against Lebanon, it's not hard to actually smuggle weapons to Lebanon or any other country in the region if it's not under siege. Gaza has been under siege for the past 16 to 17 years, if you remember, since 2006 until today. So it's by land, by air, and by sea. Lebanon doesn't have that, and that's the difference. Yes, some people say that Lebanon is not under arms embargo, but there has been an international community that came against Lebanon, banning it from acquiring strategic weapons, especially for the Lebanese army, because they don't want a country with strategic weapons that is directly at the borders with occupied Palestine, where the Israeli occupation is. They don't want anybody to be able to fight the Israelis. So the Lebanese army was banned from acquiring strategic weapons. Hezbollah did not stick to that. They had their basically strategic weapons smuggled into Lebanon at one point in time through Syria, through the sea. We don't know the routes, but they know it better than us. At the same time, they started manufacturing their own weapons. If you remember the drones, the attack drones and the spy drones that they had showed us over the past 5 months, all these drones have been manufactured in Lebanon. Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah had mentioned that in his speeches, that if you destroy a drone, we can actually manufacture up to 2,000 in the same month or the same day. I can't remember the time the limit, but they can manufacture them en masse. When it comes to the smaller missiles, they're also manufacturing them in Lebanon. So we are beyond stocking up an arms pile that we get from abroad. We're also manufacturing it over here. And this is what the Israelis fear. not only the ballistic missiles, but the ability to be able to launch more without any faltering on their part. And this is what we've seen. Yesterday, 400 missiles came out from Lebanon towards the Israeli entity, the Israeli occupation. Before that, 220 missiles. So every day we're shooting hundreds of missiles towards the Israeli entity, and they know that we mean business. There was a study done by one of the Israeli universities that one of the generals told us during one of our spaces, and he said that Hezbollah has the capacity to launch thousands of missiles per day for a whole month. So that's massive. If imagine if all these missiles were launched at the same time, now with hundreds of missiles, everybody is in the shelters. Thousands of missiles, they're going to cover the whole sky. And this is what Hezbollah meant when they said, we will make it rain on you. One of the leader of Hezbollah's parliamentary bloc said, we will make the rockets rain on you if you want to expand this. So they're ready for anything. They've been ready since 2006. Once we went into that fight against the Israelis when they did the aggression on Lebanon in 2006, Hezbollah knew that the next war that's going to come, it's going to be massive. So they've been preparing for the past basically 18 years or so, stocking up on an arsenal, learning how to build an arsenal, and basically getting ready for this fight. And the fight has happened now, and they're ready for it.
Well, okay, let's bring back Mr. Barry Grossman. What do you think would be the next step for the Lebanese people, considering this kind of escalation that has happened? How would they reconsider their policies, particularly when it comes to their relationships with those countries you mentioned have been meddling in Lebanese affairs, France, the UK, the US?
Well, I personally always try to avoid meddling or giving opinions about the internal domestic affairs of other countries, because it's the very thing that I complain about when Atlantic world countries do it to countries that I identify with. But clearly, that's a matter that's going to be determined internally, and no doubt with a great deal of input from Hezbollah. And I think ultimately we're going to see some changes. But as for what's playing out, I think Israel has obscenely miscalculated. I personally think they are or were relying on being able to instigate some kind of action against Hezbollah from within Lebanon through their various connections with other political factions. And it sounds like, it seems like that's just not going to happen, certainly not in the near future, and I doubt that it can happen at all, which means they've sort of unleashed the tiger, and now they have to deal with the consequences of it. Hezbollah is not a force that can be shut down that easily. And certainly, to correct myself against, so I'm at one with your other speaker. I mean, when I spoke about Lebanon not being under an embargo, I meant an effective embargo or not under siege, bearing in mind that there are all manner of ways of bringing any needed materials or weapons into Lebanon, which of course is already manufacturing a great deal of military technology applications as needed, whether it's drones or rockets or anything else. But they don't suffer from the same handicap that's been imposed on Palestinians, and especially Palestinians in Gaza. That's something which has to weigh very heavily in the corridors of power in Israel, especially once they understand, of course, that, as your other guest pointed out, the sheer volume of missiles that Lebanon has alone could see them rain missiles on all of the occupied territories for a period of weeks, and that's before we get into what could be done from Iran and other places. So, you know, they're really seem to be gambling their entire future on this current quite insane tactic to advance their borders and essentially annihilate Palestinians altogether.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Grossman. Thanks for that clarification. We're trying to compare the situation in Lebanon as far as Israel is concerned with what is happening in Gaza, and basically that's what we had in mind. So, in your opinion, Leila, considering the clarification that has been made, and of course we do know that Lebanon itself is quite capable of providing the military and defense equipment that it needs, but more importantly as the intelligence gathering, which is now a very important dimension in these clashes, and Hezbollah has demonstrated that it is quite capable in that front as well.
If you know, if you have watched what was happening over the past 11 months, Hezbollah has been naming places in the Israeli entity. They've had their spy drones, the Hudhud or the Hupo drone, basically flying over all these Israeli occupation territory entities' bases. And they were actually putting the intel on each base and each place that you can't get from a drone alone. You have to have intel on the ground, which shows that Hezbollah has managed to get that information on the ground from somewhere. And that's their intel on the ground, that's their strength. The Israelis, on the other hand, they're banking on 57 states to give them intel on Lebanon. You have to understand, Lebanon is an open territory for everybody. You have spies from all agencies across the world operating from Lebanon. And then you have the Americans, the British, and the French giving intel also to the Israelis. You have their spy drones flying over our territories, our space, and then giving intel to the Israelis as well, not only from the ground, but also from the sky. The day of the Pagers attacks, we saw C-130H planes, both American and British, flying across the coastline from Lebanon, and they left shortly before the explosion started happening. These are electronic warfare planes that do jamming and create frequency, among other things. They have the spy satellites that are stationed over this region. So all this technology provided by all the NATO powers at one point is aiding the Israelis with their intel. So yes, they do have basically what we call technological and intel advance over Lebanon. But imagine one resistance group in Lebanon being able to gather all this intel on all the Israeli military bases inside the occupied territories and target them accurately with new weapons all the time, new missiles they're introducing to the battlefield. That shows me that if Hezbollah had the same kind of support from the international community, the Israelis would have been wiped out long time ago. The thing is, the Israelis are banking on everybody to support it, whereas the Lebanese are fighting alone, just like the Palestinians are fighting alone, just like the Yemenis and the Iraqis and the Syrians are fighting alone. They are coming together as resistance groups, not as countries, and each one within their own limited capabilities are trying to do something, and they are doing something on the ground, and I commend them on that.
So, Mr. Grossman, Hezbollah members, time and again, particularly after these assassination attacks, they have come out saying that killing Lebanese leaders will only make it stronger, unlike what Israel tries to portray in its media. And of course, it also has mainstream media backing it with that narrative. And I believe that by watching what is happening right now, the news that we're receiving, a barrage of rockets firing from Lebanon towards Israeli settlements in northern occupied territories, sirens sounding in Haifa following rocket attacks launched from southern Lebanon, the Qadr 1 ballistic missile that targeted Mossad headquarters in the suburbs of Tel Aviv, all of these show that clearly that is not true. And Hezbollah has become stronger, if not weaker.
Phenomenon playing out in Iran, for that matter. I mean, they suffer from this syndrome in a lot of Atlantic world countries, especially the United States. I call it the superhero syndrome, that has people so focused on themselves that they think that, you know, they were born with some special capability or power, and they're going to single-handedly change or save the world, and or if there's others competing with a darker agenda, all it takes is to knock that person off. But of course, history has shown that assassinations rarely achieve anything positive at all. Hezbollah, as is the case in Iran, has a very deep talent pool of people who have been living through these conflicts their entire lives, participating in whatever way they can to contribute to achieving their national aims based on, of course, their own religious convictions. And the notion that if you kill one, that the whole thing will come down like a house of cards is really quite absurd. what it does, as with the killing of any martyrs, is it inspires others who are equally capable to take their place. And for some reason, countries like the United States and apparently Israel are incapable of comprehending that. Let's also be clear that Hezbollah has a very sophisticated leadership structure. It's like if we use a metaphor like airplanes, you know, the airplanes, they build in systems so that if one component fails, there's another one already installed to take its place. And we can only assume that Hezbollah has done everything in its power to ensure that whatever happens to any person, it's factored into the ongoing processes needed to kick in order to keep fighting for its legitimate objectives. And the idea that assassinating individuals is going to make any difference is really quite absurd. In fact, it has the opposite effect. It makes them stronger, it inspires others to join the fold, and it gives them also legitimacy in the eyes of people who otherwise might deny that they're legitimate at all. And that's one thing we've seen globally since this genocidal war started on Gaza, the most recent one in October 2007, is that people around the world, including Jewish populations in America and everywhere else, who normally would identify with the Zionist cause, have been totally disillusioned and are protesting in support of justice for Palestinians. And while it might not produce any immediate change in the long term, that spells out a very bleak future for that particular ideology or anybody who would continue to promote it.
Okay, so I believe that Leila Hatoum will be leaving us soon. If I could ask one last question. Leila, do we still have you for one last question?
Sure.
We have received word that the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has postponed his trip to New York for the UN General Assembly address. Now, we do know that this annual address is something that Netanyahu puts high on his agenda. He always has a special, agenda for showcasing his ideas, always bringing in extra things to show to the people who are listening to him. The fact that he has decided not to attend the UN General Assembly address and postpone his trip, we'll see if he will be attending in other days or not. But what does that mean?
Well, when it comes to leadership, if you are in times of crisis, you shouldn't be leaving your country and go out to address the world when you have to be next to your people. The attack that happened today in Tel Aviv, I mean, like, it hit Tel Aviv suburbs, not like shortly close to Tel Aviv. That's a massive thing. He needs to reassure his people, right? But at the same time, you have to understand there's massive dissent against Netanyahu. The people are divided. There are what you call protests against him, and it's growing. And there's an international sentiment calling him a terrorist. There's basically a subpoena that's going to be, or that has been issued against him and his people. So after the pagers attack, the international sentiment among the populations of the world who are represented at the United Nations level, they're all against what the Israelis did to the Lebanese population, because targeting civilians en masse is banned. I mean, they hit 3,300 people at the same time through civilian devices, right? So if he goes to the United Nations, everybody's going to either call him a terrorist or they walk away from his statement. So he actually hit two birds with one stone, trying to show his people that he's there as a leader, that he doesn't want to leave the country in times of crisis, and at the same time, running away from being humiliated in front of the international community because everybody's going to point fingers at him and call him a terrorist. Remember, he's the person who sells you words. He's really good with words, but he's not a stupid person at the end of the day. He knows how to play things and he knows how to take advantage of the matter. If he goes the next day or the day after, that's different. But on the day that his Tel Aviv population were hit by a missile from Hezbollah, I don't think he should have left, and this is what he did.
Okay, thank you very much, Leila Hatoum, journalist and commentator, joining us live from Beirut. Now, back to Barry. What do you think this, how should we describe what's happening right now? Is this already war? Should we call this a war between Israel and Lebanon? Is this conflict? It's a bit hard to define at this point.
Well, if it's not a war, I don't know what it is. Is it in some sort of...
Should we call it clashes? Should we call it a conflict? Is it an all-out war? Could it get any worse?
Well, you know, it certainly ranks being called a conflict, but we're not talking about clashes here, okay? Because clashes involve some kind of minor altercation. These exchanges are part of a long-running attempt by Israel to basically claw back territory from Lebanon, okay? And to basically leave Lebanon in a position that it cannot do anything to help the Palestinians in occupied Palestine. There's no point in us talking about a single incident or a handful of incidents. This has been going on for years. It's been heavily ramped up in recent months since October the 7th. And, you know, we're talking about 10,000 exchanges, 82% of which were initiated by Israel. You know, it's as close to being a full-out war as it can be. I guess the only thing that stops it from falling into that category is that they're not actively committed to, on either side, to engaging in ground operations, unlimited ground operations on each other's territory. So we're not quite there yet, but it certainly is a protracted and very serious conflict as any nation is enduring when it comes to having any arms exchange with Israel. You know, let's remember, Israel is still quite routinely attacking Syria, you know. And I certainly wouldn't call those skirmishes either, let alone what the occupation military does to individual Palestinians in the West Bank or in Gaza. These are not skirmishes. And certainly in Palestine now, what we're seeing is a full-out war, a genocidal war at that, doesn't even pay lip service to the international law of armed conflict and, you know, the various prohibited practices and weapons. Are we there yet with Lebanon? Well, maybe not quite, but this is not something that's going away. Israel has stated that in as of today, even, they have stated their intentions to ramp things up.
So, Mr. Grossman, the reason why I ask this question is that, as you mentioned, if we have the ground invasion, then it will reach a whole new level, and that's when we will definitely have to call it a full-blown war between the two sides, and that is when we can expect allies to also come in and that war to grow wider in the region. Particularly, it could be possible that Iran would be drawn into this conflict. What is your opinion?
Well, I think the entire resistance could be drawn into it, and I'm not sure that the military strategists within the resistance would necessarily opt to engage in conventional tactics by invading on the ground, given that, you know, they have, you know, they really have tanks and other bits of the latest ground armaments and artilleries that are needed to fight against a country like Israel on the ground. Instead, as Nasrallah has said, Lebanon, the resistance as a whole, or any single member country can rain missiles on key areas within the occupied territories for as long as it takes to basically do there what Israel is doing in Gaza. It's pretty straightforward. If that's what they're shopping for in Israel, and let's be clear about this, the political elite in Israel seem to be willing to sacrifice any number of Israelis to achieve their political objectives, then presumably that's what they'll get. But I don't think ultimately we'll win them any sympathy. There'll be no way to characterize a response which has been warned about and held off on for many, many months while the occupation runs amok, murdering people all over the place in their tens of thousands. There'll be no room to characterize a full-on military response using missiles as anything other than a legitimate response.
Okay, so what do you think about Iran showing support for Hezbollah? And of course, right now the Iranian president is in New York to attend the General Assembly. The president also did address the General Assembly and offered his support and called for a halt to these attacks. Do you believe that Iran can play a stronger role in bringing these clashes to an end?
I think Iran is doing everything that it can legitimately do, bearing the risks and consequences that are involved. And it certainly is not shy about the fact that it's a very good friend to Hezbollah. But that does not mean, as some people would have the world believe, people like the Americans, that Iran somehow controls Hezbollah. Nothing could be further from the truth. But Iran does more than its fair share, more than any other nation in the region, probably in the world, to support the resistance and is actively a part of the resistance. But I'm not going to second guess. I'm not a military strategist. I don't have my fingers on any buttons. And I'm not going to second guess the decisions that are made in Tehran about when to act and when to wait. There's no nation more capable of strategizing and working out an appropriate response, taking all matters into account, than those people charged with that task in Iran. And if they're not doing as much as some people claim they're doing, no doubt there's a very good reason for it. Frankly, I think, if Israel wants it, we can assume it's a bad thing, and there's nothing that Israel would like more than to see Iran wade into this conflict militarily, so that immediately that triggers a response from the United States, France, Germany, the United Kingdom, to also bring in troops and make it a full-fledged regional war, with the primary target being Iran. So when they're sitting there developing their strategies and their tactics in Iran, believe me, as we all, many of us know, they're very capable, they're very measured, and they're very patient in their response. There's no point doing anything just for the sake of being seen to be acting.